Okay, this is the third side of session 12, August 7th, 2006. To continue this quote about the instant replay and the cognitive thrills of pattern recognition, you know, McLuhan said we needed to, in the 60s, we need to turn off TV or we have all kinds of unforeseen effects. Well, the idea of that becoming a disservice, too much TV consumption, is implied in this new addictive need of pattern recognition, because he calls it the cognitive thrills of pattern recognition. And we get addicted to that. But the when he says at the beginning of the quote, for America, the electronic revolution from industrial products and consumerism to information and custom-made services is a, and that's a revolution, is a reversal of the entire way of life with goals and directions suddenly yielding to roles and figures. Now that's where, remember, I don't know, I mentioned it a while ago, a few sessions back, where when form and content or media and content in the global tactility of the satellite environment, then content becomes the environment, mm-hmm. becomes the form. Remember that?
Yep.
The word makes the market. Well, he's expressing that, yielding to roles and figures, and he puts figures in italics. And that's celebrity culture. That's everybody wanting to become seen, experienced as an actor, because the global theater made them an actor already. The proscenium arch of satellite photographing and observing the planet and all the media contents. So we move from goals and directions to becoming roles and figures. And figures is in italics. Normally you wouldn't have to say that, but I guess you would have to say it because figure could mean its traditional meaning. But he wants to show that it's an environment, so he italicizes it.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to notice that. So no longer is the form of the media molding people. We're now in, and in Take Today, page 11 of Take Today, written in the early 70s, he says, man becomes both figure and ground in the present post-satellite situation. So that's why that figures is italicized.
Mm.
And then everybody's arguing over, then the polls have to determine who is the figure worth noting. And who's the figure giving the correct pattern recognition, mirroring the pressures and rhythms and vibes of the media mix, right? So let's go to the next. With that in mind, the next quote is from, and we're now on page 21 of my book at the top. We're catching up to LaRouche, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we start LaRouche next week on page 20. The three levels of human consciousness, right? Yeah, I think that's where we're starting. Beg your pardon?
Yeah, top of page 22.
Oh, 22. We did the three levels. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, the Platonic hypotheses, three stages. Okay, so on page 21, from an essay called A Media Approach to Inflation. Now, I just went and Xeroxed that today. I'm going to give it to Harold Channer.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Channer is sort of interested very much in economics. And I said, hey, we can do a new session with me dealing with disequilibrium economics, which is McLuhan's phrase for the condition of the economy in the early 70s. So he wrote this op-ed with Barry Nevitt, the co-author of Take Today, in the New York Times, September 21st, 1974, and it's called A Media Approach to Inflation. So I need to give a copy to Harold, so I got it out of my files and Xeroxed it a couple, you know, this afternoon, and they're going to take it over to his place. All right, so the quote from that, this is from a New York Times op-ed. McLuhan says, you want to read it, Scott?
For the dominant environment of our age has itself become information or, quote, software. Since at electric speed, any figure tends to become ground, and anything, however trivial, can acquire infinite mass, the temptation and the desire to gamble with everything and anything becomes obsessive. $1 at the speed of light can do as many transactions as a million at pre-electric speeds. Quantitative projections and rational critiques cannot cope here.
And I have here, that's on page L29 in the New York Times, if you look it up on microfilm. Okay. Now, this is a really important quote, because he explains inflation. And it's, and the whole essay, the whole op-ed is a tremendous article. you have a real insight into the last 30 years when you understand what he's getting at. But note, he has software in quotes, and he has figure and ground merging. The reason software is in quotes, he's distinguishing it from information. So, on the idea, and this is why I juxtapose this, that form and content have merged, and everything is figure, or figure has become ground, and is ground, what the White House says is the only reality. For the dominant environment of... Okay, he has said something before that, blah, 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 and he's going to say, because the dominant environment of age has itself become information or software. So the dominant environment is information or software. Now, software is in quotes. Now, he's a grammarian, so why is he putting software in quotes? It's because information is a merger of all the media in global tactility, not just software, not just hardware. It's a merger. So I think that's what he's getting at. Since people think of software in a certain meaning, he has to put it in quotes to indicate that what you think of software is more. And so he calls it information. Then he tries to explain that. He says, since, he's explaining why he put it in quotes, since at electric speed any figure, and figure is in italics, highlighted, since at electric speed any figure tends to become ground, that means constitutive and causing things, and anything, however trivial, can acquire infinite mass, there's your E equals MC squared, the temptation and the desire to gamble with everything and anything becomes obsessive. In other words, if anything can make it, think of American Idol 30 years later. If anybody can make it, for who knows what reason, you never know what the audience is going to respond to, then everybody gets in the act and offers themselves up as to be a star, right?
Mm-hmm.
No matter how trivial. The temptation and the desire to gamble with everything and anything becomes obsessive. Everybody drops out of the old kind of job structures and attempts to make it somewhere else, like you did with your rock band, your teenage rock and roll combo.
Mm-hmm.
You tossed everything into putting your energies into rehearsing and practicing so that you could, and you did this obsessively, so that you could make it in the world of figure being ground. $1 at the speed of light can do as many transactions as a million at pre-electric speed. So what, before the electric age, what took $1 million can now be done by a dollar. Do you believe that? That $1 can do what couldn't be done unless you had $1 million 100 years ago?
Well, I'm not sure how I can do that personally, but I get the sense of it.
Right. This is a very important idea. The key to inflation is understanding that any object, any bit of information, moved at the speed of light, has infinite mass. That's E equals MC squared in media terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that means a dollar can become worth a billion. Now, quantitative projections and rational critiques cannot cope here. Quantitative projections and rational critiques cannot cope here. That's visual space. That's monitoring with numeracy or literacy,
mm-hmm.
alpha and numeric, trying to add up something and gauge the stages of its acceleration or accumulation is not fast enough, not multi-sensory enough. So you cannot explain rationally why the dollar becomes worth a million, but you can perceive it. And a clue is, look at the Enron scandal. They became so wealthy and managed this massive environment that the wealth could not measure. The monetary terms could not measure what they were doing. They were moving huge electronic utilities environments. And so yet the visual space environment is one of our senses, one of its extensions. So it's there. It has to be incorporated. So they had to keep the books going as if they were making a profit. We discussed this last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
And so they had to measure the profit. And the only way to do it was have someone give them a loan. And they would call it not a loan, but profit. That's a reversal.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of reversals happen when you stick electric media into the old industrial media. Mm-hmm. So, the idea...
When they could do that, The chip body allowed them to do that, but when the chip body imploded, they couldn't keep doing that. It didn't work anymore, and they got caught with their pants down.
That's right, and I predicted the chip body would collapse in 2000, and along with September 11th.
Then now, is that about the time that we flipped from the Clinton administration where we had a surplus to the Bush administration where we had a deficit?
Yeah, another reversal. I mean, the Y2K thing, January 2000, January 1st, it was supposed to have a devastating effect on other media, and yet nothing happened, which goes to show you that the chip body wasn't there anymore. It could not cause its devastation. So then if that meant the chip body evaporated, then where were we? We were on Paleolithic caveman battle time. And so the first stone was thrown from one cave to another. That was known as September 11th. Meanwhile, Enron no longer had a chip body to move the fictional visual space around, so they collapsed too. So the Bush administration represented the end of communication on the chip body level as a constituent factor, as a ground, a new ground surfaced. Now, we won't go into that. That's my stuff. But, yeah, you're on the right track with that. Now, but before, when the chip body was an environment in the 70s and 80s, it led to this inflation. And since you couldn't say distinguish anything from anything else, then $1 is equal to everything else. So $1 is the reason we lived in a wealthy society, which were these massive macroelectronic environments that provided 24/7 all kinds of information wealth. Whether you liked it or not, other people might like it. And then what you like, other people might not like what you like, but you like it, and you're glad it's there. Music, any kind of entertainment. All of that is a seamless web, so you can't determine what's different.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing affects everything else. It's like the chaos butterfly. So $1 translated into anything else, which is an immeasurable billion-dollar plus and trillion-dollar environment, then at that point you say, we got inflation, because $1 will assume infinite mass. Now, on the day before September 11th, the Pentagon announced that they were missing a trillion or two, right? Where'd it go? And
actually,
nobody
knows
anything about it. Nobody finds it because there is no such thing as $1 trillion.
Well, why would they admit to losing $3 to $4 trillion if there was no $3 to $4 trillion to lose?
They can admit it and then do nothing about it because they're asked what happened. They said, we don't know. Just went missing. They tell the story, and at the same time are saying it doesn't mean anything. Because there was another couple of trillion announced a year or two later. As of 2005, there was $4 trillion missing.
Well, somebody was keeping track of it, otherwise it never would have made the news.
Right. You keep the old cliche act of consciousness called accounting going, because that's a medium, and people are employed in it, and it represents visual space. You can't get rid of visual space. So it keeps going, but the uncomfortable truth is that every sense collapses into the other sense. So visual space keeps doing its whittling, and it adds up the numbers and refuses to recognize that it does not exist. The ground is tactility, which is immeasurable, unquantifiable. What's he say? Quantitative projections and rational critiques cannot cope here. If you follow visual space, yeah, you say, yeah, we got millions of dollars here, and interest is gathering, and in 3 years you're going to have $1 trillion. That's the logic of visual space. But that is not what's happening in electric conditions, because the electric environment can't be bought, sold, or stolen, as McLuhan would say. Nobody can hijack it for their own purposes. Only visual space cultures can. And that's called the international bankers, the Bush conspiracy, the Arabs, the oil companies, the military-industrial complex. That's all expressions of visual space as if it's in control. But it isn't. But visual space culture wants to believe it's in control because that's its cultural bias, so they think that's an issue. Other cultures, China, don't think it's an issue. But China is rapidly evaporating, becoming industrial too.
Visual space culture determines who controls what resources.
It determines the decisions, and the decisions are the resources, not the resources. But if you look at it, nobody can take responsibility for it. Apparently, all the people at fault for September 11th on the bureaucratic level all got promotions. Because in the end, nobody can say that anybody's different from anybody else, and therefore nobody is in control or responsible. Passing the buck is one of the major complaints of the second half of the 20th century. So our culture cannot translate the present situation accurately. You got to become a paramedia ecologist to do that. So I'm going to end soon, but I want to read, just as an upcoming quote, which we may not get to for a while because we're probably going to do LaRouche next week. This is a quote from an article in 1962 in a Catholic literary journal, small literary essays and reviews called Renaissance, that McCune wrote for, and this may be one of his last little articles in the Catholic magazine called Renaissance. 1962, it's called Phase 2, and here's a quote from it, in light of all that we've talked about. James Joyce knew that any technology is at once internalized by men. That means we get shaped by it and get to know it, with a resulting shift in the ratios among their senses. This shift is recorded exactly in the tones and colors and interplay of words. Language is itself the very dram of cognition and recognition. And this was page 166 of Renaissance Journal, if you ever look it up. But the thing is, I bring this up because there's the dram of cognition and recognition, or recognition, that we've been talking about. And he's talking about earlier technology. Any new media that came in, say the printing press, it altered the previous media of language, its tones and colors and interplay. So you could look at language as a register, a seismograph of the effects of new media. So we're looking to today's session has been looking at mixed corporate media, bigger environments than speech, and their effects on other media, which was a more complex interplay and involved more complex shifts in tones and colors and interplay of more complex tones and colors and interplay than just among words.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Well, mixed corporate media
interplay is inflation.
Yeah.
Okay, what were you going to say?
Mixed corporate media involves all media. There's no media outside of mixed corporate media.
Right.
Right. So, from what you're saying, it appears to me there's everything that happens at the speed of light or above the speed of light, and then there's everything that happens below the speed of light. Now, everything that happens below the speed of light happens to do with tangible, sensible things that we actually has to do with basically the world we perceive. The world
hardware.
Yeah, well, in the world of the world of perception, the world of the world of hardware, the world of physicality, and then there's all this activity going on at the speed of light, where everything takes on infinite mass, which is outside of the realm of perception, but appears to be...
No, visual perception. You experience perception. It just by watching TV.
Mm. Yeah. Well, even by the time you watch TV, it's been translated back into time and space. It may have been transmitted outside of time and space, but it's by the time you see it, it's been translated back into time and space.
No, that's the problem. You're trying to bring back quantitative projections and rational critiques on something that's simultaneous and like ESP.
Uh-huh.
That's the perceptual issue here. That's what we're trying to get people to not necessarily see, but to understand.
Well, billions of televisions around the globe are all playing the same show at the same time if it's a global broadcast of some kind.
Yeah. Now, relate that to George Washington writing a letter to Benjamin Franklin in Paris. You know, it took almost half a year,
yeah,
or whatever it was.
Right.
That's slow, and that's political communication. That has impact.
Mm-hmm.
we're in Dante's hell compared to that in terms of the multi-sensory involvement the 20th century brings in terms of the speed of communication.
Right. Yeah, something that I got from our conversation last week was that as information flow was speeding up, we were scrambling, everybody was corporations and private business and private individuals and corporate entities were scrambling to respond to the information as fast as possible. And then when information speeded up beyond the capacity to respond to it anymore, then we entered the post-information environment.
Yeah, and as you said, I think about magazines, books, newspapers. They were scrambling not to keep up. They were scrambling to look useful because we didn't need a newspaper anymore. I could get it by turning on the radio instantly or television. So eventually they rely on nostalgia and become camp just to keep going.
I don't know if it's fair to call newspaper. I can see it in the context of nostalgia, but also it's a different way of assimilating information.
It's the eye.
Yeah.
And every sense is useful.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't putting it down. I'm just saying that it scrambles. It has to adjust.
Yeah.
To the situation, and therefore, McLuhan used to say in the '60s that newspapers no longer represented antagonizing opinions. They would put on the interests of their publics. Mm-hmm. They'd become the publics. The only way they were acceptable, because they were obsolete technically. Therefore, and you have people like Walter Cronkite and that complaining about the vulgarization of the news industry, they don't understand the process of, since it's an obsolete medium in terms of the constituent of formative ground, then they will do anything to be what their market accepts. And so you have these papers in New York City, you know, New York Post, garbage journalism from a highly literate point of view, but they are expressing and putting on the preferences of their target audiences, and that's all they're left to do. Marketing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're trying. Yeah, they're trying to find out through polling what the audience wants
to hear about.
To hear about, and then they feed them what they want.
That becomes a weird cycle because they end up telling the audience what they want.
Yeah.
So it becomes, it's like Joyce asked, how can I tell my producers from my consumers?
Mm.
That's the fate of every media.
Yeah.
In a seamless web where there is no separate media.
Yeah.
And if there's no difference, then there's paranoia. And that leads to the caveman paleolithic world we're in today.
Yeah. Well, with respect to the post-information society, Chris Matthews has this new little 10-second commercial that they're running to promote his show, where he says, world events are changing so fast, we're living inside a pinball machine.
Now, that's an old, that's Newtonian imagery, billiard balls. So.
Well, yeah, but it's like, if you think of it in terms of world events just ricocheting one off the other, that's post-information.
No, that's the acoustic sphere. That's McLuhan's global 360-degree sphere. So he says we're inside a pinball machine caught in a crossfire, but it's little balls. That's the Western ego, the Western literate sensibility, but it is inside a sphere. So it's the eye-ear response to the tactile kinetic world is what he's putting on. He's putting on the American bias there.
Right.
And the journalistic bias.
But he's saying it's moving so fast, we got to switch to pattern recognition. I mean.
Right. And that's a cliche. That's an old pattern because we don't need to know what's going on.
Oh.
Because the media ain't talking to us. And/or meme isn't talking to us. It's talking to its constituents in its own little pinball machine. So he puts on the ice by pretending that it is talking to you. And he says, you got to keep up. And he doesn't know that the world stopped moving fast and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And started talking to something else, not to Chris Matthews.
Well, so you think they're broadcasting all this stuff about the war in Iraq and the war between Israel and Lebanon, you think it's irrelevant whether people watch or pay attention or want to find out what's going on?
Yep. But what do I mean by irrelevant? People want to participate in media because it's an interesting sensory extension.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stop the war in 2 weeks, put on the Olympics or put on something else, they'll watch that. Always remember, it doesn't matter what the content is. And that's why nobody can do anything about these particular tragic events. Mm-hmm. Because everybody is looking at the image before, and they're doing it from a discarding position. Where are they going to go to find the fulcrum to turn it off?
Yeah.
So, the quote here, again, Joyce knew that any technology is at once internalized by men, and it's internalized with a resulting shift in the ratios among their senses. This shift is recorded exactly in the tones and colors and interplay of words. Lebanon, or September 11th, or Enron, are translations of the post-chip world. They're expressions. That's the way we translate it. That's the tone and color that's a result of a new shift in our senses caused by the evaporation of the chip body.
Mm-hmm.
So language is itself the very drama of cognition and recognition. Then the next statement from, just want to read this, end with this, IL is the code, from the book The Interior Landscape, and that's his literary criticism, page 32, he says, they are the representatives of the age-old adequation of mind and things, enacting the drama of the endless adjustment of the interior action dispositions of the mind to the outer world, the drama of cognition itself. So I mention these as various explanations of the drama of cognition. So the previous quote said, language is itself the very drama of cognition and recognition. That's like the instant replay. Language is an instant replay, the drama of cliche to archetype, drama of cognition and recognition. They are the representatives of the age-old adequation of mind and things, enacting the drama of the endless adjustment of the interior acts and dispositions of the mind to the outer world. So adjusting the interior acts and dispositions of the mind to the outer world, that's a drama. And that's a drama of cognition itself. And the interaction of media today, Lebanon, responding to the chip body and its evaporation is an example of the age-old adequation of mind and things, the adjustment of the interior acts of the collectivities and older media to the outer world of disappeared android meme.
I got to play devil's advocate here, because this thing in the Middle East has been going on for 2,000 years. It appears to be part of the racial memory. It appears to be part of racial, maybe racial discrimination, if not religious belief and dogma. It's a fight over territory. This has been going on for 2,000 years. It sounds like you're just recontextualizing what's always been happening and saying that it's a clash of media or something.
Well, again, in your analysis, you're missing the environments. This has only been going on since 1948. The entity Israel...
Well, that's true.
What?
That is true. Although the persecution of the Jews...
In Palestine, before the 40s, the Jews and the Lebanese and the Palestinians, they all lived in harmony, relative harmony. They weren't having wars, cultural wars. They were assimilated. It was a culture there. Just like in Yugoslavia, in those areas before World War II, Belgrade, I think it is, or Sarajevo. Those places had all those different peoples, Serbs and Croats, and they all mingled
mm-hmm.
in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 90s, they're going at each other
mm-hmm.
because the environment, the media environment shifted, and it affected them. But just taking the Middle East, you had no Israel there in 600, 700 A.D. when the Muslim religion started. Now, they moved out. As they adopted manuscript culture, they became externalized in visual space and dominated a huge region. Jews were off all over the place, and they were part of that culture. Now, someone in London, the average peasant, didn't know anything about this. They had no means to know, unless some troubadours passed through, right, and sang some songs. That'd be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Songs about what was going on in Arabia. Then you have the printing Gutenberg era, and then people could read a little bit, and they know about these faraway romantic places. But there was an Ottoman Empire, and different kinds of structures there didn't involve Israel. It's only when the country of Israel was planted in 1948 and then they put it inside a radio environment, which inflamed the tribal energies, led to constant warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And people only knew about it because of radio.
Mm-hmm.
So the tribalism...
Because radio collapsed to suck the time and space out from between people, or because it was acoustic? Or
yeah, no, that's it. Just like in we had Quebec separatism in Canada, because CBC, radio and television, came into the homes of French people in Montreal, Quebec, and the province of Quebec, and all of a sudden this English tribal meme was right in their face.
Mm.
Now imagine what happens when you impose a country on a region and then broadcast all the Arabic languages at the Israelis and the Israeli languages back at them.
Yeah.
Same effect as you have in Quebec. You want separatism.
Mm.
The Arabs express it by saying, let's get rid of Israel. Israel says, no, we'll defend ourselves. And we'll attack you to defend ourselves. So it's total tribal paranoia, and it's a product of the 20th century. Yet they're using manuscript media to justify themselves. We want to make the world Islamic, or we want to make the world Jerusalem, capital city of the Hebrew religion. You know, all those older media get caught in the crossfire.
Manuscripts as close as you can get to carving it in stone, which makes it... space-based, I guess, or time-based instead of space-based.
Yes. Interesting thing, I listen to a lot of Jewish people being interviewed in different shows here in New York. I don't have to try, they're always there. But some of the experts point out that 70% of American Jews don't even recognize their American religion anymore. The younger kids don't even want to be Jews.
Mm.
And they don't stay in the Jewish culture. They want to marry people outside of their culture, and this is a big problem among the older Jewish establishment. So it's a big hologram what's going on in Israel. It's a mixture of media that's not defined properly. But it's also the present situation in Lebanon, if it's considered hugely violent, more violent than before, then that's part of the Paleolithic situation we've been in. We got it going on in Iraq, we got it going on in Afghanistan. We got a world that there's no matching going on, no respect of the other person's message. A world of post communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since that is what is the fact, then the older media, still operating under the economic pressure of providing communication, you're just going to get violence thrown at you 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just in that world. What about the scandals of drugs and of Prozac, and what happens to all those kids who shoot people that are on Prozac? Studies coming out showing that. Or Viacon, was it Viacon or Viadin, whatever it was, that killed 100,000 people.
Hmm.
I mean, there's the murder going on in hospitals and the pharmaceutical industry. That's a lot more deaths there than in any wars we got right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not as dramatic, but a lot of people dying for the mismanagement of pharmaceutical media.
Yeah. So McLuhan defined the visual, the book, as being a hot medium, high definition, and the television is a cool medium, low definition. You fill in the, your brain.
Fill it in. Hot, miss, hot.
And radio was, what, somewhere between?
No, it was high definition because it presented acoustic information in great detail.
Mm.
So you couldn't fill it in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is the speech is the content. That's speech. But radio is not just speech. Speech is a minor part of radio. Radio is the electronic discarnate effect where everybody's in the same resonating interval, the imploded simulacrum.
Well, how's that different from television? Or is it the same?
It's before television.
Yeah, but it's the same effect.
Yes, the electric age from the telegraph on is instantaneously global membrane.
Right.
Seamless web. But it gets refined. And so radio is a hot medium for its content. TV is a cool medium because its content is a bunch of dots you got to fill in.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you participate in fill-in was the definition of a cool medium.
Right. But both radio and TV have the same effect.
As a tactile, involving technical medium.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's discarnate.
Right. Hmm.
So there's several ratios going on, right?
Right.
So let's end with that.
Okay. Very good.
Yep. Another evening and much was learned.
Okay.